In the year 2154, humankind has figured out a way to travel to distant planets and project human consciousness into artificially grown alien bodies. Well, at least we have in James Cameron's sci-fi epic Avatar, which recently went past the $1 billion mark at the box office. It tells the story of paralyzed vet Jake Sully, who re-ups to zoom off to a moon called Pandora to operate one of those 9-foot-tall blue avatars.
Me and Norma here to drive these remotely controlled bodies called avatars, and they're grown from human DNA mixed with the DNA of the natives.
It all looks and feels so real, it makes you wonder whether we'll actually be able to do any of that cool stuff in 44 years. Adam Hadhazy of Popular Mechanics recently evaluated the actuality of avatar creations coming into fruition. If you have questions about how close we might be to avatar technology, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Adam Hadhazy is a reporter. His article, The Science Behind James Cameron's Avatar, appeared on the Popular Mechanics website last month. And we're with us in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be here.
And, that first part, to get to Pandora, it's a long way between here and there.
Yes, about 26 trillion miles, not a hop and a skip.
No, so we're told that, we're at least infer, that this was not done with a faster-than-light drive, but by putting all the passengers in some sort of animated suspension.
Yes, the idea is to basically put people into a sort of a cryogenic freeze, put them into hibernation, and that way you don't have to worry about so much keeping them fed and keeping them occupied for the journey, which it takes about 6 years, given how fast the spacecraft in Avatar goes, which is about 70% of the speed of light. They say.
Which is a lot faster than anything humans have managed to go that far yet. Nevertheless, there's a lot of questions about that. Any of that in the even distant future?
Distant future, sure. Near term, not so much. This is something that has certainly been looked at a fair amount. NASA has been looking at it over the years, time to time. And the idea is to basically find a way to generate enough thrust to really get going, as fast as you can. And the best bang for your buck is it's really when you combine matter and antimatter. Antimatter is basically, it's just as it sounds, it's the opposite of the matter that we're all used to. The microphone in front of me, the desk here under my hands, it's when matter and antimatter come into contact, they annihilate each other in
big boom.
Exactly. Yeah. Pure energy. Obviously, there's not a lot of antimatter around. We're talking all time. They've only really made something on the order of nanograms. So
you'd have to find a way to manufacture it and control these explosions so that they wouldn't blow up the ship, too, and channel all of this stuff. And, even when you get going fast, you got to slow down, too, and that's the other part.
Not to mention, and that's the whole thing. I mean, you really can't think of a more volatile fuel than antimatter. And we do have ways to confine it using electromagnetic fields. But the problem is, in whatever storage container you have, it's really impossible at this point to make a perfect vacuum. So even if there's just a few stray molecules of real matter in there, the antimatter will hit those molecules and will annihilate. So it's not a very good fuel tank. You're losing fuel as you go.
And then the other part, the cryogenic state, which allows people to basically sleep their way off to Pandora.
Yes. Well, there's been some work on that. I think we all might have heard of the infamous Ted Williams case. He had his
With just his head, though.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So they've certainly looked into doing it, and it can work for certain creatures, but not for people.
Or at least not yet.
At least not yet, yes.
Nobody has been revived, let's put it that way.
Yes, fair enough.
Okay. We're talking with Adam Hadhazy, who wrote an article in Popular Mechanics website called The Science Behind James Cameron's Avatar. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to ask a question about what's possible and what isn't. Or email us talk@npr.org. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. Let's go to Robert, and Robert's with us from Moultrie in Georgia.
How are you doing today?
I'm well, thanks.
I have a question. I haven't seen the movie. The main character is paralyzed, right?
Yes.
Okay. How do they explain in the movie how they somehow can build him an avatar genetically engineered, like, you know, half human, half whatever creature that is, and they can project this consciousness into it. Well, for some reason, they can't fix this guy's body.
Well, that is sort of one of those. Well,
actually, they said they could fix his body, but right. It would cost a lot of money, which he didn't have.
It costs more money to fix his body than it would be to build an avatar.
Well,
for him.
Somebody was willing to pay for the avatar, and I don't think that was cheap either. But he was going to earn the use of his legs from the corporation that was hiring him out. Yeah.
Okay, I wondered about that because that was like one of the main things that like sort of stuck in my craw whenever I saw the previews for the movie. You know, I'm like that looks like. That sounds like BS to me, you know?
Anyway. It is a little, sure, it's definitely, a convenience of the narrative, but it does make it that much more interesting for the main character, Jake, that he cannot walk, and then via the means of this, 9 or 10 foot tall blue skin alien, he's able to run around.
Leap tall buildings with
right.
a single
so basically,
bound.
Basically, they're blackmailing this guy then.
Yeah, I think that might be a way.
More or less, yeah.
More or less, yeah. Right. That'd be a way to think about it.
That's some awful commentary, you know?
There's a lot of commentary in that movie. Robert, okay. Thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you very much.
But that idea of, first of all, how do you grow a 9-foot-tall alien blue body?
You got me on that one. Not entirely sure how they intend to explain that. But in terms of transferring one's consciousness, the human consciousness, to... Again, this half alien, half human hybrid. That is definitely a bit far fetched for now. Just to talk a little bit about this concept of transferring consciousness from one being to another. We've sort of done sort of crude versions of the first half of it. What you see in the movie is that the humans are placed into what are sort of coffin like devices, and then they have some electrodes placed over their chests and sort of a halo-like device placed around their heads. And this apparently is supposed to draw their thoughts and motivations and consciousness. And then this is then transferred to their avatar. In terms of actually pulling us off, as I said, we've sort of done the crude first half of this, which is integrating a brain with a machine, a so-called brain-machine interface.
Mm-hmm.
We've done some work on that. It's in with people. Well, it's allowed them to move computer cursors.
I've seen some of those toys
like
where with the brain concentrated brainwaves, you can move a very light ball.
Okay, yeah, right. and similar sort of idea, but where more progress has been made and where we're sort of getting closer to something like you might see in the movie is of course with monkeys with electrodes implanted in their brains. A really neat example why this was done just about 2 years ago, scientists at Duke University working with scientists in Japan, they trained a rhesus monkey to walk upright on a treadmill in North Carolina, and they had electrodes implanted in its brain, and they were able to take these neural signals, send them over the internet to Japan, and they took some video too as well, and got a robot in Japan to synchronize its movements with this monkey.
Cool, unless you were the monkey.
800-989-8255.
Let's go to Scott. Scott with us from Jackson in Michigan.
Hi. I saw on a documentary on cable television that at least one person at NASA has been researching the idea of using blowfish toxin or tetrodotoxin to put people in a sort of suspended animation or coma to survive the long trip to Mars. I forget how long that's supposed to take. What is it, 4 months, 6 months? But obviously,
depends.
Many people have speculated that if you had to live in the space the size of an Airstream trailer for 4 months, you'd just go insane. So to spare you the stress of being awake all that time, they're going to use blowfish toxin, which, as you recall, that's if you go to the wrong sushi restaurant.
Exactly. I was going to say, you just go to the wrong sushi restaurant, you're going to wake up on Mars.
Right.
Well, there we go. That's an example of, you know, some creatures are able to go into suspended animation for very long periods.
Scott, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Okay, bye.
You put me off my sushi now. just after the movie came out, we talked with Ty Ruben Ellingson, who is the lead vehicle designer for Avatar, and he was talking about James Cameron's approach to making the exoskeletal war machine seem really realistic.
Jim's approach to it was to look at existing technologies and try to extrapolate from that what you know, what the military of the future might have without going into an area which would be too fantastic or too fantasy-like. He really talked about these things as an extension of a tank, for example, that mm-hmm. had some of the technologies that are being developed by the military today. You mentioned the exoskeleton is a similar idea that you wear a suit that's robotic and it actually increases your human capabilities, your strength and your speed. This was that kind of on steroids.
That definitely on steroids. Those machines look very cool.
Oh, yeah. Those would be very fun to stomp around in.
And we do have Waldos where you can use your hand, and there's another hand inside of a box that will do stuff for you. But this is obviously a long way from that.
Well, in terms of something that big and heavily armored and just massive, we're definitely a long ways off from that. Some of the close stuff that we have... it's basically sort of a wearable robotic suit. It's on your arms and your back and your legs. It's made by a company called Sarcos, which is part of Raytheon now. They call it the XOS suit. They'll be coming out with a new generation of it this spring, actually. But, yeah, it's basically something that allows the wearer to lift hundreds of pounds over and over again without getting tired, something that they could not do normally. And so, you know, it's definitely a basis for what you see in the movie.
We're talking with Adam Hadhazy, who reports occasionally for Popular Mechanics about the science of Avatar. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Jim, and Jim's calling us from Cedar Rapids.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'd like to know if the people that are 9 or 10 feet tall are tall enough that they couldn't, stand up due to strength-to-weight ratio, scaling factor considerations, that kind of thing?
Adam?
That's actually a very interesting question. And how they get around that in the movie, this I don't believe this actually appears in the movie, this bit of information, but as you could probably guess, there is lots and lots of information available outside of the movie. There's actually something coming out called the Pandorapedia. They've just made some of the first entries available online that give some of the background, backstory, and deeper science and explanations of what you see on screen. Pandora is supposed to have less gravity than Earth. And by having less gravity there, you're able to support bigger biological structures. So it's an explanation.
Oh, that's why the trees are so tall.
That's why you see these ginormous trees, and sure enough, the sentient life forms that have developed there are 10 feet tall.
I see. All right. So, Jim, it's a different matter. It's a matter of gravity.
Thank you very much.
All right. And I guess that's supposed to explain the floating mountains.
That's actually something else. And again, this is something that is not in the movie, but is – or it's not directly stated in the movie. But the idea there is that the mineral called unobtainium is
– They couldn't come up with a better name than unobtainium.
I was looking into that. Apparently, that's sort of an old sci-fi joke. It's something that you can't get, you want, you just call it unobtainium. So anyway, this mineral is supposed to have the property where in magnetic fields, which Pandora is supposed to have a very strong magnetic field. The Earth has a magnetic field also, that deposits of this unobtainium due to the magnetic field can actually float. Of course, that left the question with me that how come they're so interested in mining this stuff out of Pandora rather than just going after these big floating chunks of what it sounds like is the mineral that they're after. But
well, let's go next to Jamie, and Jamie's calling from Charlotte.
Hi. As a science major with a secondary education minor, I want to be a science teacher. My question is, is there been a movie in the past where they have said at that time, there's no way that can happen, you know, the technology is not there, but the technology is there now?
Adam, can you think of any movies where the technology predicted in a science fiction movie of the past has seemed impossible but come to pass?
There definitely are examples. I'm drawing a little bit of a blank right now, but certainly if you Star Trek came to mind, and no, we're not really doing anything you've seen there. But, one example that you can sort of draw from that is if you think about, cell phones. We saw in the original Star Trek series they would reach into their pocket and, call the Enterprise.
True. Yep.
And, that was sort of far-fetched then, sort of in the era of landlines.
And one of the very earliest movies, From the Earth to the Moon. We've done that.
There you go.
Well, how about something a little bit more, not outrageous, but something a little bit more far-fetched, or what they would have thought was far-fetched that we can kind of think about now that, it's possible, but...
Well, one of the odd ones is you see all of these science fiction films of the past, and they don't have computers.
That's true.
They have sort of a computer in Star Trek, but there are all these 1950s and 1960s science fiction films. All right, 2001 excepted, which had a ginormous computer, but nevertheless, there are no computers on the bridges of those starships.
So I'm just wondering, I'm always wondering that if the science... We think about these things and we wonder about these things, but, and we say, oh, well, the science isn't there. And I just, I'm convinced that the science is out there. We just haven't found it yet.
And that's certainly an encouraging thought, and that is sort of the beauty of sci-fi movies and books and so forth, is that it really gets people thinking about the possibilities. And it's interesting when you see terms that are made in science fiction, they then cross over into real science. And
like Waldo, for example.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. Like in National Geographic this month, there is about how there's a new bionic arm out where they can they've been able to do up to 22 movements, whereas the past quote-unquote bionic arms have only been able to do 3.
Oh.
So because they've been able to cut open the skin and move the nerves and transfer, have electrodes transfer.
Fascinating.
That's great.
I'm hoping. I got my fingers crossed.
We're all crossing our fingers, and somebody else is too at remote control. Jamie, thank you very much for the call. And Adam Hadhazy, thanks very much for being with us. He and I are going to get into our jetpacks and, chat in Esperanto on our way home. Adam Hadhazy reports occasionally for Popular Mechanics. The science behind James Cameron's Avatar appeared on the Popular Mechanics website last month. Thanks very much for being with us here in Studio 3A.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, a blast of cold air has shocked the country from the Upper Plains to the Midwest, even Florida. More on that tomorrow. This is NPR News.